Welcome to Greatness, where the world's leading thinkers share their ideas about how to create greatness, great leaders, great teams, and great organizations. Why be good when you can be great? This is Gretchen Gagel with Greatness, and I am so excited today to welcome Zach Mercurio, leading author and consultant on the role of purpose and meaning in work, to our podcast. Welcome, Zach.
Hey, Gretchen. It's great to be here.
So, full disclosure, Zach and I know each other very well. We were studying for our PhDs together and had the privilege and joy of spending every other Saturday together for 3 years of our lives. Mm-hmm. Our PhD cohort spent a lot of quality time with one another, and it's really through that time together that I created such that I gathered so much respect for you, Zach, and the passion that you have for what you're studying. So tell us a little bit about how you originally got interested in the role of purpose and meaning in work.
Well, I think it starts with having a lack of it in my first job out of my undergrad. If I go all the way back there, I was very susceptible, as a lot of people are, into what, you know, psychologist Jennifer Crocker at the University of Michigan, she calls them self-image goals. So making goals to acquire and achieve and maintain a positive image of the self. The opposite of those are compassionate goals, which is a goal made to contribute, to add value to others. And throughout my upbringing, because I was the youngest of three, I was very susceptible to comparing myself to others. And I was also very indecisive in college. And so I made a lot of decisions based on what things would look like, what it would look like to acquire and achieve a certain amount of money at a certain job. And I ended up in an organization that was similarly self-image obsessed. And I saw firsthand the really detrimental effects of that. I mean, people talked about what they were doing the last weekend or the weekend coming up. They talked about simply acquiring and achieving things, and everybody was miserable. You know, I often say when you live by results, you die by results. And if the team missed a financial mark, you know, they were psychologically dead. And I had that feeling inside as well. I didn't know why I was doing what I was doing, what use I was, how I was significant. And really, I met a guy, and this is the theme of my whole research and career, is that extraordinary people seem to do ordinary things with a really extraordinary perspective. And I met a cab driver who I thought should hate his job. And he asked me, how am I doing? It was like a Tuesday. And I just grumbled something to him like, oh, is it almost the weekend yet? And it was a Tuesday. It is astounding how many people live for 2/7 of their lives. And I thought he was going to hate his job. And I said, how's it going for you? And he lit up and he said, I love it. I love it. And he talked about how he got to be friends for people who weren't able to talk to their friends, parents that people didn't talk to. He was able to be the first face of the United States to people who flew into Reagan National and when he picked them up in Washington, D.C. And I realized he was one of the first people that talked about his compassionate goals, his goal of his work to contribute to others. And he was really happy. And it was since then that I've met really ordinary people doing ordinary work along the way, that I've been really extraordinary people doing ordinary work along the way, that I've been really compelled by this idea of how do you build that perspective to see work and experience work as meaningful, and what can organizations do to facilitate that experience of meaningfulness and significance. So I guess it came out of a bit of me not experiencing it to then me wanting to do something about it.
Yeah, that's so great. So your book, The Invisible Leader, Transform Your Life, Work, and Organization with the Power of Authentic Purpose. So how does that concept of authentic purpose roll into that?
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that we've known pretty firmly in the research for the last 40 years is that human beings, one of the uniting traits of humans is that we yearn for significance. You know, we yearn to be useful. And a sense of purpose, so purpose defined as the reason for which something is done or created, the reason for its existence, its usefulness, really activates that central desire. And like in our minds, UCLA's Semmel Center for Neuroscience just found that there's a part of our brain that's wired for altruism. And so our brain rewards us when we're focused on contribution in the form of all of these amazing neurotransmitters that control for mood, movement, and motivation. And purpose gives our work direction. You know, I often say that it's the grand storyline of our work and of our lives, of the ultimate value and contribution we're making to human beings. And in any organization, on any team, at the very end of every supply chain on planet Earth is a human being. And what purpose enables us to do is to bring that human being and embed it into the work. So individuals can experience meaningfulness and individuals become better. And therefore organizations, because organizations are individuals, organizations become optimized when they're on purpose. So the reason why it's called the invisible leader is that there was a management scholar named Mary Parker Follett in the late 20s. And she said, she had this theory of invisible leadership. And she said that the most powerful leader is not a person, but it's a common purpose. And that leaders and followers are both following the invisible leader, the common purpose, which becomes embedded into how we approach tasks, how we do our work, and how we are with one another. It's that invisible thread that binds teams and organizations together.
You know, I'm a leader listening to this, and I say, that's all great, Zach, but how do you create that amazing binding purpose that creates that leadership for people? What does that look like?
Yeah, well, I think it has to be, well, first, you know, after I do talks or workshops or engagements, you know, someone will always say, Zach, what's the best practice, you know, to embed purpose into my people's work? And I always say the best practice is the one you already do yourself. So I often ask people, how do you, you know, stay connected to why your job exists if you do? And teach people that, because I think it's important. I think as leaders, we often try to teach things that we're not doing ourselves. But if I had to give, you know, some practical advice, there's this great book by Kim Cameron, psychologist at the University of Michigan. It's called Positive Leadership: Strategies for Extraordinary Performance. And it's a great summary of the research on enabling positive meaning. And I think one of the things that's important to understand for people is that jobs don't give people meaning. People make meaning in jobs. And so One of my practices that I work with people on is, how do you make that experience of meaningfulness, knowing your work is positive, purposeful, and significant, how do you make that as easy as possible? So for example, you know, providing evidence of the work's meaning. You know, oftentimes leaders will say, well, this, you did a great job, or they'll give a task, but there's three components for work motivation to occur, right? Someone has to know how the task contributes to a bigger outcome. They have to know how their task matters to someone else, and they have to know how they can use their strengths on that task. So leaders can ask those questions and make that clear. What's the end outcome? How does your task eventually help a human being? How does it connect to a bigger purpose to create the conditions for people to be purposeful? So I often say that's the starting point, because you can have a big purpose statement but not be purposeful. Right. And I see it all the time, and that being purposeful and inspiring a purposeful workforce starts with cultivating a contribution-centered thinking, being, and acting, a set of habits that enact those things.
It's so interesting, because I think back when I was in engineering school, I was a co-op student for Lone Star Gas, doing pipeline design for a gas utility. And I think because I started in that industry, and I've had many clients in that industry, every time I meet with them, I say, thank you for safely delivering gas to my home, because people take that for granted, that you can turn your gas stove on and your gas heater works and your hot water heater and everything. And it's really, it's phenomenal how they distribute natural gas throughout the United States. And to say thank you to them for that. And they always look at me like they're a little surprised that I say that, but I really have gratitude around that.
Well, you know, that's an interesting story, because it doesn't seem to be natural for us to be systems thinkers, like to be able to think how what I'm doing today as an isolated task has this inevitable impact. I was doing some work with commercial plumbing contractors after a 12-hour shift, 3 hours on meaning and purpose. And what was interesting about that is, well, first we asked them, how many of you all were born to be a plumber? And no one raised their hand. But at the end of it, we asked how many people find profound meaning in being a plumber. And all of them raised their hand. And one of the questions I asked was, think about a time in your work where you most believed that your work deeply mattered. What was happening? Who was around? And this one guy literally stood up and he pointed at me and goes, my work matters every day because I clean sewer pipes so that you don't have to drink cross-contaminated water. Mm-hmm. But what we find in interviews with people like this is that, again, there's that difference between knowing your purpose and being purposeful. He went on to tell me that he reminds himself every day when he goes in to clean that sewer pipe. He uses this term, so that. I'm doing this so that what? So one of the key tactics to experiencing meaningful work is about the stories we tell ourselves about the work and the environment reminding us about that so that. So I think those two words are really powerful, and your story reminded me of that. So that what? You're doing this so that what? And the result of having that end of that so that be embedded is internal motivation and that intrinsic motivation that comes from the experience of psychological meaningfulness.
That's so great. It reminds me when I came back into construction as an industry in, 2013, so 6 years ago, many of my friends had forgotten that I'd been in construction. I'd been with the Women's Foundation and an assistant dean at DU. And they're like, why construction? And I said, we build society. Like, if you want to plug your cell phone in and charge it, if you want to have a baby in a hospital, if you want to fly in an airplane out of an airport, if you want to drive on a road, if you want to eat in a restaurant, it all gets constructed. And to think about the industry in that way, to shape the thinking about that, I think was really interesting for them. So there's been a lot of buzz about the need for purpose and meaning in work lately. I've seen a real increase in this. Why now? Why are people focused? Why is the awareness level rising on these topics?
You know, I think that it's because of the accumulation of the last decade, really, of increased access to people's stories from around the world and increased access to storytelling. It used to be, right, that if you, let's talk about it from the worker perspective, if you had a bad experience at work, you would go home and tell your family. Right? It was a local, work was localized. It was very personal. It seems that work has become more communal. Now, someone can have a negative experience at work. They can feel unfulfilled. And with the tap of a button, they can tell 1.2 million people, right? You know, via Twitter or social media. And so I think a lot of companies have lost control of their story, have lost control of the experiences that create. And many organizations are being exposed for being the opposite of meaning-giving cultures. And in fact, you know, Studs Terkel in his book Working in 1974, he did 135 interviews of people from grave diggers to accountants. And one of the commonalities he found was that, and he said, people are yearning for a daily sense of purpose as well as daily bread, you know, for a sense of astonishment rather than a Monday through Friday sort of dying. And I think when you look at the rates of dissatisfaction, the rates of disengagement that have basically been a flat line for the past 10 years, I think people are starting to tell that story to each other in community, in that meaning-making context of work has become more central to the narratives we're saying. And I think that people are more conspicuous post-recession now for work and are looking for places where they can experience meaningfulness. There was just a survey done by BetterUp that found this last year that people would forego, on average, and this is across socioeconomic spectrum and occupation, people would forego on average up to 23% of their lifetime earnings for a workplace in which they experienced consistent meaningfulness. There was a study done by PricewaterhouseCoopers that found that 83% of people prioritize finding daily meaning in their job. So I think from a workforce perspective, people are really yearning for this based on what hasn't been working and based on being able to see examples of an alternative way of being and working.
Yeah, it's so interesting. When I stepped down from being a managing director at FMI and went to being president of a nonprofit, so one can only imagine what that looked like as far as the salary drop.
Yeah.
And owning a portion of a $50 million company, and people were really surprised by that. And I came back to consulting. I mean, I love consulting. I love helping people, and it really drives a lot of passion. But at that point in my life, I wasn't finding meaning in that, and I really wanted to get to get off an airplane and get to know people in Denver, Colorado. For one thing, but to find meaning in a different way. And so does meaning change? I mean, can you find meaning in something and then you don't find meaning in it for a while and you need to go find meaning someplace else? What does that research look like?
We use the terms, even in the popular press, really interchangeably. And meaning, we make meaning out of everything. We're always mm-hmm. making, it's the sense we make of something, of anything. And so when that sense is positive and purposeful and significant, research finds it's meaningful. But mm-hmm. when it's not significant, both you can't see the significance for other people, and then it doesn't amplify your values and your strengths and give a pathway to express those, we can experience work as less meaningful. One interesting thing, and I think I mentioned this before, that a job doesn't give us meaning, or there aren't industries that are meaningful and industries that are meaningless. For example, I've worked with a group of trauma surgeons who are burnt out and experience profound meaninglessness in their jobs, even though they're saving people every single day, but they don't experience meaningfulness. They know their work is meaningful, but they don't experience it as meaningful because of the environment, as largely has depersonalized their work. But then on the other hand, I can talk to a commercial plumber who finds their work profoundly meaningful. So the experience of meaningful work can be personal, but it's also very fluid. And there's two halves of it, right? We can craft our work as meaningful by understanding how it impacts another person, by understanding how it contributes to a bigger goal, by understanding and using our strengths to do it. But if the environment doesn't allow us to maintain that meaningfulness or give us ongoing evidence of the work's meaning, then it's short-lived. And that's what my research with janitors found, is that meaningfulness was a very volatile feeling. You could experience meaningfulness in one moment, and then in the next experience meaninglessness. And so the environment and leaders, which is what one of the main tenets of this podcast is all about, have a crucial role in creating meaning-giving environments. But as an individual, it can change given how your strengths are enacted to meet different human needs and how that makes you feel in different environments. But again, meaningfulness is made in a job, not given by a job. And an industry, or because you're in a nonprofit, isn't inherently meaningful. You can experience meaninglessness and be in a quote unquote meaningful industry.
Mm-hmm. That's so interesting. So I'm the leader of those trauma surgeons. What do I do? I mean, what are those practical steps?
Yeah. So one of the initial steps is to ask people what matters to them. I mean, it's a really simple question, but what matters to you? When do you experience your work as especially meaningful? There's two questions that I asked the janitors in the research study. One was, describe a time when you experienced work as meaningful, whatever that means to you, and then describe a time where you experienced work as meaningless. Just those two questions and opening up that conversation can be really enlightening to understand some of the contextual variables that are acting on people. And I call them it's like central tendencies, right? Or in statistics, what are the tendencies for that person when they experience work as meaningful? And what can you do as a leader to facilitate those things? The other aspect is one of the key causes of burnout, especially amongst physicians or especially amongst people who are in client service roles, is that whenever the work becomes depersonalized because different tasks take away from thinking about that usefulness on the end human being, it can be a contributor to experiences of burnout. So finding ways to repersonalize the work, making sure that feedback from the end user gets repeatedly and directly embedded into the work of the trauma surgeon. And one thing this group of trauma surgeons that I work with did was at the beginning of every team huddle, all they say now is, hey, just remember, there's a human on the table. There's a human on the table. And just those little nudges of focusing our attention to contribution can repersonalize and help create different meaning-making structures, which allow us to respond better to things like burnout or disengagement. So those are a couple of tips.
That's great. And so, you know, I've been reading, was teaching a strategic HR course last semester before last, and reading the Gallup engagement statistics, specifically for different countries, since I'm over in Australia now. This is a huge issue given how, what percentage of people are actively disengaged. I forget their categories, but it's a huge percentage of our work population that really is not engaged.
Oh, yeah. And it's disturbing to me because they go home, you know, and, you know, work is like a central meaning-making context, whether we want it to be or not. You know, I had a leader once say to me, well, it's not the role of the work was never made to make people feel good. You know, there's a lot of that narrative out there, right? That work is work. It's called work for a reason. A lot of these cliches we hear, but yet we're meaning-making creatures, and that meaning-making structure doesn't shut off because we clock in somewhere.
Right.
So whether we want our work to give us meaning or whether we say we don't, it does. Either way. And inevitably, the way you spend and make meaning in 35% of your waking life is going to affect how you vote, how you buy things, how you parent, how you're a friend, your relationships. And so that's why I think it's almost a public health concern that we cultivate organizations that enable human thriving, you know, and meaningfulness. Mm-hmm. Now, and I think that you had mentioned, you know, those engagement scores. I worry about the focus on engagement. Like if you look at, I just looked at a really funny graph that was Gallup's engagement scores for the past 10 years, and it was a flat line. So I'll send that to you. But despite all of the efforts and the attention, we still haven't made many gains there. And I think one reason is that an engagement score is a lagging indicator. It tells you something right. That's already happened. We know the three leading indicators of engagement are psychological safety. Can I make mistakes here? Am I on a team that I trust? Psychological meaningfulness. Does it even matter? Does the work matter to me? Does it matter to other people? And then availability. So do I have the resources I need to do my job well? I think people should be regularly having a pulse on those things as the leading indicators of engagement rather than relying on a quarterly lagging indicator like an engagement score. So that's where I think those skills of being attuned to these things and creating an environment which does create trust, enable meaningfulness, and allows people to be vulnerable and to thrive is really crucial as a leading indicator of engagement.
Yeah. And it's so interesting. One of the statistics that you had shared with me is that a survey of 502 leaders revealed that 79% think that connecting their people to an inspiring purpose is critical, but only 27% say they regularly enact purpose when working with their team. So that's one of the things that my leadership courses that I'm teaching over here at the Australian National University is leaders need to be mindful of their activities and are they really aligning what they do on a daily basis with what they feel is important to the success in creating a great organization, as we talk about here on greatness.
Yeah, absolutely. The practices of enabling meaning. I mean, and strategically embedding it in. I often say that at Stanford, BJ Fogg had done some research on the three elements of all human behavior. What three elements need to happen for any human behavior to happen? And I think leaders are one of the primary roles is right influencing behavior. Mm-hmm. And you need motivation, so you have to want to do it. You need ability, you need to know how to do it, and then the environment has to trigger you to do it. Right. So if we want people to be purposeful, for example, we have to really spend a lot of time cultivating the internal motivation for people to want to do what they're doing. And I often say to leaders, as robustly as you deploy and spend thinking about your financial strategy, do you as robustly think about maintaining the motivation to do the behaviors that will enable the results of your financial results in the first place? Mm-hmm. And so I think that when you think about motivation, psychological meaningfulness is one of the keys to motivation. And so building that into everyday practices is important. You know, this whole purpose stuff, it's not an event. It's not a statement. It's a set of daily habits that turn an organization into one that's oriented towards this bigger purpose that produces people who experience meaningfulness.
Yeah. Well, and it's so interesting because you shared with me, and I had actually seen a headline about this, the Business Roundtable, redefining the purpose of a corporation to promote an economy that serves all Americans. And we talk about this quite a bit in my leadership and ethics course at the University of Denver. We talk about ethics within the context of capitalism and what does that look like? And, you know, who are we serving? What stakeholders are we serving? And so I think it's really interesting that in some ways we're also taking that redefinition into thinking about corporations collectively.
Yeah, the Business Roundtable decision was a landmark moment. I mean, to reframe the primary stakeholders of an organization to your employees, your customers, and society as the top three to then shareholders is a big shift. Milton Friedman's probably rolling around in his grave somewhere,
right?
You know, who coined that the primary role was to increase shareholder value. But again, I think it's all a result of that inherent human yearning for significance, the lack of trust coming out of the recession of companies and people putting the onus on companies to take a stand and contribute socially. But then I'm also a little bit leery, to be honest, Gretchen, you know, because I think that we had this in the 1997 with conscious capitalism, right? I mean, the triple bottom line. And so my big question is, why hasn't that taken hold mainstream? And I think it goes back to this beginning of our conversation, that there's a big difference between, you know, knowing your purpose and having a bigger other-centered purpose and enacting the policies, procedures, and habits of being purposeful, of closing that gap between, you know, the stimulating idea of purpose and the transformative practice of purpose. And one of the questions that I ask people is that you take your mission statement, you take your CSR statement, you take your purpose statement, and you ask yourself in every decision, if my purpose were my boss, what would I do here? If purpose were the ultimate boss, what decision would I make? And how would we make that decision? And just kind of some of those checks to help to align values and everyday behaviors to that purpose, I think is what's going to move the gap from purpose as a stimulating idea to a transformative practice. I do believe that just like in the late 90s where businesses were like, are we going to need a website? Are we going to need a website to be a business? Right now, people are asking me that question. Do we really need to be purpose-centered? And I think in 20 years, you're going to find that just like if you don't have a digital footprint today, you're irrelevant. If you're not purpose-centered and enabling meaningfulness, you'll be irrelevant as a business in 20 years.
Zach, so wonderful to spend time with you. I want to say the name of your book again, The Invisible Leader, Transform Your Life, Work, and Organization with the Power of Authentic Purpose. It's really been a thrill to have you as a guest on Greatness. And I'm absolutely certain that our listeners will greatly benefit from your insights. Thanks so much, Zach.
Thanks, Gretchen.
Interested in hearing more? Visit us at greatnessconsulting.com. Thank you.